Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone. Today is the 19th of September, and as the sun is rising later this morning, we celebrate the fact that the Son of God, Jesus Christ, is risen. And that is good news indeed. It's great news to start the day with. Because that tomb is empty, we know we serve the living King of a living kingdom that knows no end. And this is Faith Radio Mornings, where we start our day together, listening from all around 15 different listening areas like Duluth, Minnesota, the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Madison, Wisconsin, Waterloo, Iowa, all around the Midwest. And for those of you, maybe among the 18,000 of you that have downloaded the Faith Radio app, you're listening from around the country or even around the world. And we will have honest conversations today about the news and top of the mind relevant topics. And we'll do that through the lens of genuine faith and real hope. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Logan Rausch, running the sound and keeping everything flowing smoothly throughout the morning, and Paul Perot in the newsroom, who provides me with stacks and stacks of news items to sort through in our 2 hours together. Does an incredible job of research for the show. And of course, we love it when you join Faith Radio Mornings, and would welcome your call or your text at any point in the morning at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Looking forward to our first hour ahead. We're going to connect with our ongoing friend of the show, Drew Griffin, who's in Oxford right now. And Drew is the managing editor at Providence Magazine, which writes about global affairs from a Christian perspective. And we'll be talking about some of the promises that came out actually late last night, our time, out of North Korea, that they are going to be dismantling some of the nuclear infrastructure in that country. Get his take on that. And we'll also touch on the ongoing crackdown on Christianity in China. And after that segment with Drew in our bottom of the hour break, regular guest Kent Kaiser will join us. Kent, I know, is one of your favorites on the program. He is the department chair of communications at the University of Northwestern. He has covered political debates and affairs and been part of campaigns for a number of years. So he will give us some further perspective on the ongoing Judge Kavanaugh hearings that seem to be taking a turn about every 13 and a half seconds these days, with new things coming through Twitter or new headlines coming out, where I know that the confirmation process was canceled this Thursday to be rebooted perhaps next week. So we'll get Kent's take on this, because it really is an important issue for the foreseeable future in our country. So lots of news to get to, but before getting to that, let's read our short morning prayer of the morning, whether you're driving to work or getting your kids ready to school or for school, or possibly just rubbing the sleep out of your eyes as I am this morning. A morning prayer to start our day from St. Patrick of the British Isles, who offered this invocation when the sun was coming up. He would say, "Lord, be with us this day, within us to purify us, above us to draw us up, beneath us to sustain us, before us to lead us, behind us to restrain us, and around us to protect us." Looking forward to Drew Griffin next of Providence Magazine on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line coming from us from Oxford in the United Kingdom, specifically England. It's Drew Griffin, who is the managing editor for Providence Magazine. And Drew, do I understand that as we speak right now, you are sitting not only in Oxford, but you are in the famous Eagle and Child pub? That's the news that Paul sent me. Is that true?
Yeah, that's correct. The Eagle and Child is the pub made famous by C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and the Inklings, their friends and writers, as they would gather here and discuss the latest books that they've written. And I'm actually inside that pub here in Oxford.
Oh, that's tremendous. So are you more of a Narnia guy? Are you more of a Middle Earth guy, or a combination thereof?
Well, I think, you know, you grew up in Narnia and then you moved to Middle Earth. So I think that's probably where I started. I'm more of a Middle Earth guy at this point.
Oh, I love it. Well, thanks for joining us from that location. It is a really fun place to visit, and lots to get to from around the world. And I saw some of the headlines coming out late last night, United States time, probably a little earlier for you, and that was out of North Korea, where they at least once again suggested there would be a dismantling of some of the nuclear infrastructure. Drew, what is your take on this, just given history of North Korea and promises that they've made?
Well, yes. Well, this is kind of a promise that's been made in the lead up to another inter-Korean summit between the North and the South. And Kim Jong-un has indicated that, yeah, they're going to dismantle one of their facilities and allow international inspectors to come in. And this is, the fifth such summit, I think, ever. So I think it's at the stage where it could still turn on a dime and change really at any moment. That seems to be the pattern and the kind of the history. If you look back over the last 25 to 30 years, that there's the tendency for promises to be made and for them not always necessarily to be kept. But it's hopeful. I think it's encouraging. I think it's being done slightly independent of the United States. I think it's I think it's hopeful, though. I think we should be hopeful about it, and it's encouraging if they follow through.
Well, Drew, I'd be curious, too, if they do follow through, and I know some of the motivation to develop nuclear weapons is a sense that they can protect themselves, and who would they look to maybe to then protect them in the future? Would it be somebody like China? I can't imagine they would ultimately look to the United States to help provide protection for them in the world.
Yes, I mean, as far as the North is concerned, they're overly reliant upon China, and so that's kind of the strong bedrock relationship there. The South Korea is overly reliant on the United States, but hopefully, if peace can be achieved, if there can be a decrease in the conflict and the tensions there, the need for protection, the need for defense might be mitigated somewhat. So that's definitely what we can hope for in the future.
Drew Griffin, the managing editor of Providence Magazine, and Drew, lots of other topics to get to. I know one of the conversations that came out that had global implications was the ongoing refugee crisis. That's almost global at this point, where different countries are having to come to grips and grapple with how many refugees can they take into their country and still sustain themselves from an infrastructure standpoint. And of course, our Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, came out yesterday and said, we are going to reduce the number of refugees in the years ahead that we can take each year, which is, it's been 45,000 refugees. Now he's reducing it down to 30,000. What is your take on sort of this ongoing development?
Well, the refugee crisis has really reached an all-time high. There are 25 million refugees worldwide, which is really the highest, I think, in recorded history that we've got. The proposal that Pompeo put forward is just that. It is a proposal. It's going to go to Congress. They're going to consult with Congress and get approval for lowering that number. That's the lowest amount. 30,000 is the lowest amount since 1980. So it really represents a sharp decline and decrease in the number of refugees. And I think it's an important distinction to be made is that while, refugee policy falls under the larger bracket of immigrant and immigration kind of policy, it is it has its own distinct place, right? These aren't just immigrants. These aren't people who are just trying to come to the United States for fun or for economic development or opportunity. These are people fleeing their homes because of political persecution, because of war, and because of strife, and they're seeking asylum, and they're trying to flee areas of the world in which life has become impossible or untenable, and they're coming to places like the United States. And so we're in decreasing the number of refugees. We're not only just, it's not just an immigrant issue. These are people who are Christians, who are Muslims, who are experiencing religious persecution and seeking asylum and seeking refugee status. And so I think it's a significant step, and I would argue an unfortunate step to decrease that number and limit the number of refugees coming in the United States.
Well, I think it's such an important conversation because we have to balance the humanitarian crisis with the stabilization of any given country. I know places like Italy are really struggling with the refugees coming from the Middle East and places like Syria across the Mediterranean to their borders. And Italy doesn't feel like they have the sustainability economically to help any longer. But at the same time, you have this humanitarian crisis where people will literally die if they are not brought into the country. So how does a country historically balance this kind of thing, Drew, between the obvious humanitarian efforts with the stabilization of their own country?
Well, I think that the United States is in a unique position in that regard, in that, you know, European nations being much smaller, European nations being largely organized around kind of a ethnic national identity, they have specific concerns in Europe that I think that are coming to the front in regards to this crisis that the United States isn't necessarily have. I mean, we are a country that's been built on immigration. It's a country that's been built on receiving people fleeing war and torn regions. We're a melting pot and a mosaic of multiple different cultures. And we're also economically situated, I think, to be able to absorb refugees. And we have a culture that I think supports diversity and multiculturalism in a way that sometimes smaller European nations, more insulated nations do not. And so I think the United States, you know, has been given a lot. We've been blessed with a lot. We have a lot of resources. We've got a lot of freedom, and our culture has a free expression. That's a great responsibility, I think, that comes with that, what we've been given. And I think we stand as a unique and unique place in the world community to be able to offer refuge to those who are hurting and to those who are facing persecution and being denied freedom around the world.
Andrew, I'd be curious your take, too, as we talk about the refugee crisis. How is that similar to, but how is it also different from just ongoing immigration policy? There really is a difference between humanitarian crisis and people wanting to come into the country for a different opportunity.
Right. Well, you really see the two sides begin to kind of overlap. And one of the things that I think we need to be cognizant of and aware of is our perception on the world stage and our moral credibility. In, you know, denying refuge to refugees and asylum seekers, I think that speaks into the world. I think that people who are hurting in the world, people who are looking to the U.S. for moral leadership can read that in a negative way. But also the way that we treat immigrants and the way that we treat legal immigrants and even those who are illegal, I think also speaks loudly to the world in terms of our moral leadership. I mean, right now we've got 12,800 children in detention camps that have been separated from their parents, that have been trying to flee into the country. That is a fivefold increase from just even this last year. These camps are crowded tent camps in Texas that are having to be increased from holding a few hundred kids to a couple of thousand kids. And with every child and every thousand that we add to that number, that's a thousand children that have been separated from their parents. That now we're risking creating thousands of orphans. If we can't find their parents, many of the parents have been already returned to their homes and deported back to their home countries. And so the effort to go back and find them and try and reunite them is immense. And I think that we have to be careful in the way in which that we proceed, that we need to secure our borders. I believe in that. I believe we need strong immigration policy. But the way in which we conduct ourselves and port ourselves, I think, is being watched by the rest of the world. And I think we need to keep that in mind and act in a humanitarian way, in a way inconsistent with our the values that have defined America from the beginning.
That's Drew Griffin of Providence Magazine, the managing editor, focusing on global conversations and news from a Christian perspective. Drew, coming from us live from Eagle and the Child Pub out of Great Britain, where C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien used to do their work. Drew, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'd love to get your perspective on what's happening within China and the ongoing crackdown of Christianity. We'll talk about that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined on the line from Drew Griffin, with Drew Griffin, who is the managing editor at Providence Magazine, and he's coming to us live from the Eagle and Child Pub in the United Kingdom, where C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien did some of their historic literature and development of these incredible worlds of Narnia and Middle-earth. And Drew, we were talking just before the break and referencing what's going on in China these days, and it seems like every day that I come into the studio, there's increasing crackdowns happening for Christians in China, and this tension is growing between allegiance to the state and allegiance to Jesus's kingdom. What are some of the developments that you see?
So China, since about 2016-2017, has begun a process called Sinification. And that is a process by which they are enforcing kind of socialist ideology and the socialist belief system on their country, and that they are kind of demanding that a lot of groups, minority groups within the country, Buddhists and Uyghur Muslims and Christians, begin to conform to the socialist culture and relinquish their religious beliefs within their minority communities. And they've begun a real crackdown over the last 2 to 3 years. They've been destroying Buddhist structures, burning temples, Buddhist temples. They have been imprisoning Uyghur Muslims in the Uyghur region, and then they have recently really begun a crackdown on Christian churches and the Christian community there in China. They've been burning 4,000 crosses. They've been closing churches, bulldozing down churches, burning Bibles and mass demonstrations. They have put in monitoring devices and closed-circuit cameras inside churches to monitor what pastors say and what churches say. So it's really a top-down 1984-esque totalitarian crackdown on religious minorities in China in order to get them to conform to the kind of atheistic socialist worldview and kind of pledge allegiance to the state. So it's a frightening time for religious minorities in China, and especially Christians and believers. And I think that we in the United States not only need to be aware of it, but I think there are things that we can do to kind of advocate in the future to apply pressure on China to cease what they're doing.
Well, and I think when you look at the history of socialism, and I'd be curious your take on this, Drew, is do we have examples from history in which socialism was not, at the end of the day, quite oppressive? I know it sounds so promising, and there's some movement within the United States towards at least advocating for socialism, but this is, generally speaking, how socialism ends, is through the oppression of people to conform to what the government says. Or are there examples I'm missing here?
No, I mean, I think you're right. I think historically we've seen that, you know, socialism, once institutionalized in a government, has the tendency to be a very finely tuned system where it can work, but it only works if everyone is marching to the beat of that drummer. I mean, there's no margin for people to not be a part of the system. And a system that finely tuned, in theory, always kind of sounds great, but in practice always lends itself to, I think, a totalitarian crackdown in order to ensure that everyone conforms and everyone is part of the system. It is not a system, socialism, that suffers diversity or pluralism well, and it doesn't count those things as values. And so ultimately, I think that's its greatest weakness, because as we've seen in the West, as we've seen in the United States, that there's the competitive advantage that competition brings, and that diversity and pluralism brings, ultimately leads to the flourishing of society and the flourishing of economies. And socialism, and their desire to kind of control everything and engineer everything from the top down, ultimately is counterproductive. And I think squelches the human spirit to the point where people begin to flee, and they begin to become refugees and asylum seekers. And so you have to build walls to keep them in. So, yeah, history is not kind to socialism, and you wish that China would recognize that. But those in power, once they're in power, find it very difficult to give that power up. And so I think it's definitely worth our prayers and our awareness of what's going on there.
Yeah, from the lessons of history, we can learn some things relative to future conversations. Drew, we have just about a minute left, but we should touch on some of the movement geopolitically that's happening around the globe, in which some people that weren't allies in the past, but as they're experiencing sanctions from Western governments, are beginning to join up, places like Venezuela, Russia, China. What do we see with some of the movements around some of these countries that seem to be creating some alliances in response to the ongoing sanctions from the West?
Yeah, there's a particular group of nations that are kind of responding to U.S. sanctions in particular, and kind of U.S. diplomatic pressure in particular, and it's Venezuela, Iran, Russia, and Turkey. Those countries, which in the past have historically not had necessarily much to do with each other, sometimes have been at odds with one another, they are partnering together as the United States kind of focuses this diplomatic ire on each one of these nations, rightly so. These nations are despotic and oppressive. But as they're doing that, they're forming a little axis of power to cooperate, to invest in one another. And so I think that definitely should be taken into consideration when we engage with them diplomatically, and it should be part of the calculus as we kind of engage on the world stage, that we're not alone and that there are other centers of power kind of pushing against us, and we need to be aware of those threats.
That's Drew Griffin, who's the managing editor for Providence Magazine. Drew, thanks for taking the time this morning for Faith Radio Mornings to join us from the Eagle and Child Pub. I certainly hope you enjoy the rest of your time in the United Kingdom.
Well, thanks so much, Peter. It's always good to talk to you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, great to have you, Drew. We'll take a break here for Lighten Up and Bottom of the Hour News, and we'll be joined in the second half of this hour by Kent Kaiser, the Department Chair of Communications at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, and we'll talk about some of the updates going on in the Judge Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court hearings. Hey, shout out to our friends in North Dakota listening now to Faith Radio Mornings. You are answering the call to help people affected by Hurricane Florence along the East Coast. There's going to be a lot of help needed in the days and months and probably even years ahead. But the North Dakota Department of Health says that 28 people are going to Raleigh, North Carolina this week as they're part of the Emergency Management Assistance Compact Medical Response Teams. North Dakota will be reimbursed by North Carolina. What a great example of states coming together to help in the cleanup efforts and to help repair people's lives there. So great shout out to North Dakota. Thanks for the work there. See that Kent Kaiser is in studio already, and I'm sure in just a few minutes we're going to be talking about the ongoing proceedings and the Judge Kavanaugh confirmation hearings for the Supreme Court. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we had the opportunity to speak with Captain Ronald Johnson, who was there at Ground Zero of the Ferguson events about 4 years ago, and he led the way in dissipating some of the violence and difficulty and tension there. And he talked with us about how to be an example to deal with anger and division and react to it in a way with love.
For me, it was a moment of not showing those titles and those uniforms we wear, but showing ourselves of being men and women and fathers and mothers and uncles and all those things we are before we put on any title that we have. And I talk in a book about not wearing my police vest. And everybody said, why didn't you wear it? And even my wife, of course, it was a challenging time. But I wanted the people on the street to know that I am you. I'm a part of you. And I don't need protection from you. My faith was protecting me. My God was protecting me. And for me at that moment, that's all that I needed. And I'm walking down the street, and this lady comes out of the crowd and gives me this big hug and says, thank you for seeing my face. And at that moment, I knew that I just needed to walk, and that was my plan. And that was a plan that God was giving me. And I about 4 or 5 months later, I was out in the community, and I saw her. She walked up and said, do you remember me? And I said, no. And she said, I was a lady that came out and hugged you. And she said, my name was Angel. And what a name, and that the first person that would hug me was a lady by the name of Angel.
Such a great time with Captain Johnson yesterday, and just this compelling message of when love meets hate, what can happen, and how it brings us across the lines together to keep walking forward in this. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com, search for Ronald Johnson or Ferguson, and you'll certainly find the entire interview we had with him. Well, Kent Kaiser is across from me, and Kent has some interesting news about a paper that was accepted that he submitted and places in the world he's going to travel next spring. Can't wait to talk with Kent next on Faith Radio Mornings.
The majority of America's founders were strongly Christian, but that's not what you hear today from many in academia. This is Jim Garlow, The tendency today in academia is to make the exception the rule. They cite Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, who express beliefs in conflict at times with basic Christian doctrines. And then they conclude that all the other founders believed like they did. A true educator would never allow such a weak argument. Signer Roger Sherman said, "God commands all men everywhere to repent. He also commands them to believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and assured us that all who do repent and believe shall be saved." That's the end of quote. I could tell you of many more just like that. What academia should do is show you how strongly Christian most founders were, and then point to Thomas Jefferson and Franklin as exceptions. There's more addressing this precarious moment in our history at jimgarlow.com.
And, of course, those Wednesday morning bagpipes signal the arrival of Kent Kaiser, the Department Chair of Communications at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, and that he's here in studio joining me. I love our time together. Kent, good morning.
Good morning.
So I understand that you submitted a paper of some kind, and it was accepted, and you're going to travel to a really interesting, exotic place next spring.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. New Zealand.
New Zealand.
I haven't been south of the equator, so this will be a whole new hemisphere.
It really will. Yeah. And I understand, we were talking, and I understand that even when you flush the toilets in South the equator, that it actually spins the opposite direction. I would love it. You, if you can take some FaceTime,
you
moments there.
You want me to make a video?
Yeah. I really want to learn about that part of the hemisphere. Well, what an exciting opportunity. New Zealand sounds like just a magical place.
I can't wait.
Well, lots to get into this morning. Of course, we have the ongoing news developments and the Judge Kavanaugh proceedings. That's top of the mind, I think, for many people listening. And it seems like about every 13 seconds, something shifts. And, of course, last week we saw an anonymous source come out and claim that Judge Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her back when she was 15 years old and he was 17. And then the source was revealed as a professor, Christine Ford. And now what are some of the developments recently where we see that there's some hearings maybe coming up, but that's even shifting? Where are we with this whole thing, Kent?
Well, they were originally scheduling a vote for on Kavanaugh for this Thursday or tomorrow, which has been postponed. And so they're going to have this hearing to give this woman her say on Monday. But now her attorney has sent a letter saying that she doesn't want to testify until after a thorough investigation by the FBI. And I'm not really sure what authority the FBI has in here. But as Senator Grassley from Iowa has said, there's no way that any kind of investigation from the FBI would have any bearing on her testimony. And so his intention is for this hearing to go forward. And so it'll be interesting whether she shows up, but the invitation is there. It's still open, according to him, according to Senator Grassley. And so if she shows up, that'll be her time to speak and be heard. And it's difficult to say exactly what the senators are going to determine through this, because it's not as though there's any evidence. There's nobody to corroborate the story. It's all just highly political. I suppose anybody who's opposed to Kavanaugh is going to be inclined to believe her, and anybody who's in favor of Kavanaugh is going to be disinclined to believe her. There's probably a couple of senators who are kind of in the middle who are probably trying to figure out which way the political winds are blowing for them. And, of course, it's the same ones as we usually talk about in these hearings, like Senator Collins from Maine, who – she said that this woman needs to have her say, but she hasn't been suggested that she's disinclined to vote for Kavanaugh. And it's hard to tell what this does for some of the Democratic senators who we would have expected perhaps to vote for Kavanaugh, like Senator Heitkamp from North Dakota. Hopefully they'll all see, his record as a judge, and as an adult. It seems absurd to me that these charges are coming up from, childhood, really. Yeah. You think about a 15-year-old, a 17-year-old. These are kids. I don't see how this should have any bearing on their professions today. But here we are, very political. And the other thing is it became extremely political because of the fact that Senator Feinstein from California held on to this letter that she supposedly received months ago from this woman and didn't ask any questions in her private meetings with Kavanaugh, didn't ask any questions in the public hearings with Kavanaugh, and only pulled this letter out, you know, what, in the last several days. If it was, it's hard to believe that politics could become more ugly than it already is, but Senator Feinstein has certainly found a way to make it so.
Well, I think that's part of what is so disheartening, perhaps, for so many of our listeners, I know myself included in this conversation, is that there's a legitimate conversation to be had about how women have been treated and abused and sexually even assaulted over these last 40, 50, 70 years in our country. But it does feel like in this specific instance that it's being politicized in a way that you described in terms of, I mean, we've been having this information for the past 2-3 months. It didn't come to light. And now, of course, she won't testify, she said last night, unless there's a complete FBI investigation, which would take the confirmation proceedings past the midterm elections. And it's just disheartening. It's hard to know how to navigate all this.
Well, it'd be a lot more believable if it weren't for the fact that the accuser is a extremely left-wing partisan Democrat. That to me just takes away from her credibility, you know. And I mean, who knows whether this happened? But again, it's a 15 and a 17-year-old. Doesn't sound like, you know, even if the scenario that was described took place, it doesn't sound like it was, you know, it doesn't sound as though there was intent there to, you know, I don't know, commit some kind of a crime. But again, they were 15 and 17, and I mean, I don't want to litigate that. We can't. I mean, this is the thing, and I don't think the Senate can either, and that's the point. I think that this is all just a big dog and pony show to try and smear this man who has had a great career, and he's already serving on the second highest court in the land. You know, if she really had this problem, I don't really understand why she wouldn't have come forward before if she thought that he didn't deserve to have this illustrious career.
And Kent, I know that there's some other comments that came out last night from an ABC News person that's pretty well known in Matthew Dowd, that in talking about Supreme Court justices referenced Clarence Thomas and called him a sexual predator last night based on the Anita Hill confirmation proceedings that a lot of people are making parallels with from back when Clarence Thomas was confirmed. Is there any way of walking back from the edge and the precipice of where we seem to be? I mean, Supreme Court justices used to get voted in by, you know, 98-2 or 91-9 or these sort of numbers, and now it just becomes so ugly. How do we ever walk back from this?
Yeah, I don't think that happens again. It's definitely not in this political climate. It's inconceivable that somebody could get that kind of support today, which is unfortunate, because really what should be looked at is their qualifications, you know, their experience, and this personal stuff. You know, to me, it's pretty irrelevant to whether they'll make a good jurist.
Yeah, and we see sort of this ongoing, we used to have a pretty free and open exchange of ideas in our country. It felt like, obviously, there was tension as we would talk about competing ideas. But our last guest, Drew Griffin, was reflecting on socialism as this geopolitical structure that really becomes oppressive. Everybody has to think a certain kind of way. And boy, when we get to that point, it's very difficult to think how we could ever have constructive conversations like this again.
That's right. And I hope that they'll move along with this process now with Kavanaugh. I think that, you know, we've delayed, and I hope that once the accuser and Kavanaugh are both heard out on this specific issue, that they'll move ahead and get him confirmed. And I go back to, you know, when we were talking about who might be chosen. You know, we wouldn't be in this mess if Trump had nominated the person I wanted, and which many conservatives really wanted, which was Amy Barrett. But that's neither here nor there at this point.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, because by all accounts, especially if Trump remains president through 2024, that there might be one or possibly even two more openings on the Supreme Court. So, I mean, this is not going to go anywhere anytime soon.
That's right.
So Kent Kaiser, Department Chair of Communication from the University of Northwestern St. Paul, we'll take a short break. When we come back, we got to get into some of the back and forth going on between former Secretary of State John Kerry and Senator Marco Rubio as they are sniping at each other on Twitter and in other conversations. More to come with Kent Kaiser next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's just about 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Dr. Ken Kaiser, my regular weekly Wednesday guest. He's a department chair of communications, and we talk a lot about politics and just communication in general. And, Ken, there were some things that came out yesterday. First, from John Kerry with some pretty helpful comments, quote unquote, relative to Trump. This just, again, this is this disheartening stuff going back and forth, where he said that President Trump really is a rare combination, having the immaturity of an 8-year-old boy with the insecurity of a teenage girl. Again, this just really helps further the conversation, doesn't it?
Well, and imagine if Trump had said that same thing about Kerry, all the feminists would be up in arms talking about how he made this sexist remark. But we're not hearing that from the mainstream media, are we?
Well, and it's even part of what we saw with Keith Ellison as he was being elected as part of Minnesota, and just his movement in his political careers. He was accused of some abuse, and that seemed to get swept under the rug. And now we have the Kavanaugh situation, which seems to have lesser credibility from an accusation standpoint. But Ellison was just, we don't really know.
Right.
We're going to
move
forward.
And in fact, the Ellison's accuser, where she's got a lot of evidence and so on, she has said that the Democratic Party in Minnesota does not believe her story, or they refuse to believe her story. But she's got tons more evidence and everything than Kavanaugh's accuser does. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, the double standards on both sides of the party, it really ends up depending on who's in power and who's not in terms of the
claims support, that they make. Right. It's just all partisan. It's like, who are you going to believe? Oh, if they're on my side, I'm going to believe them. If they're not, I don't.
Yeah, and that's what takes away from those conversations. Well, of course, Kerry's in the news for other reasons, too, where Senator Marco Rubio has come out and suggested that he might not need to be investigated based on his role in some of the Iranian exchanges and some monetary exchanges and all of that. Where are we with this situation?
Well, there's a suggestion from Rubio that John Kerry may have broken the law. There's a law that criminalizes negotiation by unsanctioned individuals with foreign governments that are hostile towards the U.S. That law, by the way, is called the Logan Act.
It's not the Logan Rausch Act. I mean, he's just 22. He couldn't have gotten something like that passed already.
But yeah, that's pretty serious. That somebody is unsanctioned and going and negotiating with a hostile foreign government. You know, I know that there was a time when Dennis Rodman went over to North Korea, and that was controversial. But he wasn't negotiating anything, and that was controversial. But here we have John Kerry, who's a former Secretary of State, and really what he's trying to do is preserve the Obama legacy, I suppose, with the Iran nuclear deal. And he's going there and basically telling them that if they can wait out the Trump presidency and other different things, then things will change. And the question is, was he negotiating something? What was he doing? And so that's part of what Marco Rubio has asked the Department of Justice to investigate. And then the other thing is that if you are lobbying on behalf of a foreign government, then you need to be registered. And so that's a different law, the Foreign Agents Registration Act. And it's not clear what Kerry was doing when he came back. Like if he's trying to have some influence on our government, then he should have been registered as a foreign agent, as if working for Iran, which is kind of incredible to think that a former Secretary of State from our country would be working for another government. But that's essentially what Rubio is asking the DOJ to investigate.
Well, and I think it speaks to the question about what role past administration officials might have in current administration situations. I know that Joe Biden and President Obama have been pretty active lately and pretty vocal about things. And President Obama said, we wanted to take a year away to not really be involved, but we feel like our voice is too important now for the future. What is the role of past administration officials like this?
Well, usually it's been the case that past presidents don't criticize their successors, but you know, the other day, Obama gave a speech where he was basically trying to take credit for all the good things that have taken place since Trump was elected. And it's kind of funny because, of course, he doesn't want to take credit for, or he doesn't want to take the blame for anything that, you know, negative that might have happened. But he's trying to take credit for the economy and things which are clearly not attributable to the things that he did, but in fact are attributable to the things that Trump has done. I mean, just one example, you know, he was looking at some economic reports of what's going on with trade deals, and I'm not necessarily in favor of tariffs, but it does seem as though President Trump, with his foreign policy with tariffs, does seem to have these foreign governments coming to the table to negotiate. And it seems like lately, even though the talk sort of stalled with North Korea, lately, like in the last day, yep. North Korea has sort of opened up the door again to having conversations. And even with like looking at our closest trading partner, which is Canada, looking at the impact there, you know, they have been reluctant to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement. And so we're doing so with Mexico, unilaterally with Mexico. And now suddenly Canada's trying to come to the table because they're looking economically at losing billions of dollars because, you know, we've lowered our corporate tax rate. And so companies that are doing business on both sides of the border are looking at their options and saying, hey, we're going to be better off in the U.S. And just calculating, it looks like Canada stands to lose about 20% of its wealth or of its profits, you know, for overall corporate profits for the year, which is an incredible, you know, bite into their economy. And it's because of Trump's policies, not because of Obama's policies. And these other foreign countries are coming to negotiate with us now, not because of anything that took place in the Obama administration, but clearly because of Trump's policies. So for Obama to be out there now and trying to take credit for these good things is absurd.
Well, I think whether you like the president or would rather not support the president, not one thing you can say is that he wasn't true to his word in terms of the election cycle. He's doing exactly what it is that he said he would do, especially related to this economic policy.
That's exactly what drives the liberals nuts, is that here we have a guy who, about the first time in our lives, is actually doing all the things that he said. I mean, some will kind of back off of one policy or another, but look, right on down the line, I mean, we're going to move the embassy in Israel. We did it, you know, and so fast that you heard all kinds of squawking and for about a minute, and then it was gone because he moved so fast that, you know, now we're on to another thing, you know. And it's just been one thing after another like that with this administration, where he's made these promises, he's keeping these promises, and he's not backing off of some of them just as if they were political ploys to get elected.
Yeah, it's Ken Kaiser, Department Chair of Communications at Northwestern. Ken, we love having you join us on Wednesday mornings to talk through some of these headlines. Appreciate your time. Enjoy classes later today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We'll take a break here, and then we'll wrap up the first hour of our show. Appreciate our guests in the first hour of Faith Radio Mornings, and Drew Griffin and Ken Kaiser, talking about so many of these complicated and complex and sometimes disheartening dimensions in the news cycle politically, as we try to stay anchored in the middle of the road here, recognizing we're not either Fox News or CNN News here on Faith Radio Mornings. We are hopefully Christian news, coming at it with honest conversations, genuine faith, and real hope. Excited to see Bill English, one of the longest running guests here on Faith Radio Mornings. He's out in the holding tank right now. We'll invite him in, and we're going to talk about what it means to not just start a business, but what business owners are facing day in and day out as believers. So more to come on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.